Support for Central Florida Public Media comes from the University of Central Florida, offering their Master's of Science in Data Analytics program. Designed to enhance skills in data analysis and machine learning, the new Artificial Intelligence track offers specialized courses to deepen understanding of AI technologies and their applications. More at ce.ucf.edu/data.
Getting a lunar green thumb. You're listening to Are We There Yet?, the radio show exploring space exploration. Hi, I'm Marion Summerall, filling in for Brennan Byrne. If people are going to live on the moon long term, we're going to need to learn how to live on the land. That includes growing food in lunar dirt. But if we want to test that here on Earth, we can't just grab dirt from the moon. So to study moon dirt, we have to make it synthetically. And that's where places like the University of Central Florida's Exolith Lab come in. We'll speak with UCF's Dan Britt about how he makes artificial moon dirt, or regolith. Then we'll speak with some of the people who are using that same dirt to grow chickpeas. We'll speak with the University of Texas at Austin's Sarah Santos and Texas A&M's Jess Adkin about these lunar chickpeas. That's ahead on Are We There Yet? As we get closer and closer to sending humans back to the moon through NASA's Artemis program, understanding the environment and the dirt on the moon is crucial as humans spend more and more time living and working on the lunar surface. But since we can't just grab a ton of moon dirt, called regolith, from the moon and bring it back to Earth to test those techniques, we have to make synthetic moon dirt. At the University of Central Florida's Exolith Lab, technicians make everything from synthetic moon dust to asteroid regolith. What do people do with synthetic moon dirt? And who is ordering it? Here to talk more about the methods of making replica moon dirt is Dan Britt, a Pegasus Professor of Planetary Sciences at the Physics Department at the University of Central Florida. Dan, welcome back to Are We There Yet?
Great to be back.
It's great to have you. I'm really excited because today we're going to be talking about moon dirt. Let's start off with the basics. We can't just really go to the moon and take a ton of dirt and bring it back here, right? So that's where you and the Regolith Lab come in. Tell me how you make moon dirt.
Well, dirt on the moon is made of minerals. We've been to the moon. We've got lots of samples. So we can look at the minerals in those samples and go to the terrestrial locations where those minerals happen and use those. The thing is that the moon has kind of a unique geology, and the mineral assemblages that you see on the moon don't occur together on Earth any one place. So you have to get a bit of this from over here and a bit of that from over there and combine them in a very specific way, because the Earth is much different from the moon. The primary factors that affect your backyard garden are not going to be cosmic ray bombardment and micrometeorite hypervelocity impacts. You know, it's got to be sun and rain. And so what we have to do is mimic those things that dominate in the lunar conditions. So you have to break up these rocks in the right way. You have to make sure you have the right mineralogy, because it's the mineralogy that drives how these things respond to things like rovers going over them, or people digging into this stuff, or building a lunar base. And the whole idea is to create dirt that is as high fidelity as possible to the stuff you'll find on the moon. Otherwise, you have this tendency to be surprised. And surprises are usually indications of failure. When you're surprised, it usually means that your machine breaks, or your plants don't grow, or something bad happens. The whole point about this is that we're trying to avoid something bad. The way you succeed is you test as realistically as possible. So what we're trying to do at all levels, you know, mechanically, agriculturally, texturally, create as realistic a situation as possible. So you test in the right kind of environment.
And so we've talked a lot about the differences between lunar soil and the soil we have here on Earth. I was looking at the website and looking at the regolith you make, and I noticed that it almost looks like sand with like dark pieces in it. And this may be just a simple question, but I was curious about like the coloration behind that.
You look at the moon, you see light stuff and dark stuff. The light stuff actually covers 85% of the moon. So the far side of the moon, which you never see from Earth, is entirely made of light stuff. This is the lunar crust, which is made of a mineral called anorthosite. It's abundant on the moon. It's actually fairly rare on Earth. It's So there are only a couple of places where you find big deposits of anorthosite. One place is in Montana, Idaho area. There's some in Siberia. The really big mineable deposit is in Greenland. And so there's a big anorthosite mine in Greenland, and that's where we get most of that light stuff.
Okay, and I have to ask, how much moon regolith are you making in, like, let's say, like, a month? I guess I'm imagining, like, are these, like, barrels of it going out to different places?
Well, pallets, probably. We have some big orders. Like, I think our biggest order was something on the order of 16 tons. And so every year we're making, it varies from month to month quite a bit, but every year we're making tens of tons of this stuff.
Pallets. Okay. Wow. Wow. So this is really in high demand. I guess who's buying it? Who's in need of that? I mean, are we mostly talking about, like, research institutes, like universities? What about private space companies?
Well, the last big order was a private space company, which I am constrained by non-disclosure to not disclose. But for instance, one of our very big orders was a university in Australia. Universities buy a lot, research centers buy a lot, and globally. So we've had customers in India, South Korea, the European Union, Japan, NASA, all over. Private companies buy a lot, and also schools. So we're involved in a couple of NASA programs called Plant the Moon, Plant Mars. And so we provide the regolith that K-12 groups come together and participate in this and try to figure out how to grow plants in this rather forbidding mixture of very difficult stuff.
You're listening to Are We There Yet? The radio show exploring space exploration. I'm Marion Summerall, filling in for Brennan Byrne. We are speaking with Dan Britt, a Pegasus professor of planetary sciences at the physics department at the University of Central Florida, about how synthetic moon dirt is made. I mean, it's so fascinating to me that not only, you know, like you said, you're working with these private space companies on this too, but it is really a learning opportunity for universities, for students, right? Like young students, like you mentioned. And, you know, speaking of universities, we actually spoke with some folks that are using your regolith to grow chickpeas. The soil's from your lab. You know, what are some other uses aside from growing chickpeas or growing plants? What are some of these other companies and research institutes using it for?
Well, a lot of them are trying to figure out ways to remediate the soil so it's not as difficult on the plants. One of the characteristics of regolith is that it has very sharp edges. So the grains are actually quite rough and quite fractal. And this is very hard on plant growth and plant's ability to extract nutrients because it basically gets poked by all the little grains. So it doesn't like that. So you have to figure out what to add to the soil to make it a little bit more accommodating. On Earth, soil is moderated by aqueous, that is water processes. So the edges get rounded, they get smoothed. And so when you're dealing with terrestrial sand is like little ball bearings compared to lunar regolith. And it's an entirely different process. And so the roots grow quite well in terrestrial soils because the terrestrial soils fundamentally are not as sharp and pokey as the lunar regolith or Martian regolith to the roots.
Less pokey. That's a fun way of putting it. And I'm curious, there's such a mass movement right now to bring humans back to the moon, right? NASA with the Artemis program. Have you been seeing an uptick in demand for the lunar regolith, considering, like, this push to get humans back to the moon? I mean, you did just mention the tons, right, order that we can't disclose. But you've said, you know, that you're having these pallets of it. Have you seen kind of an uptick in recent years as Artemis has really, you know, been pushed by NASA and the U.S.?
Oh, yes. I think it's going to accelerate. The whole issue is test as realistically as possible. Otherwise, you screw up. And so this is something that the space industry is embracing. And I think we'll see a lot more of that in the future.
And especially too, you know, because not only is this important for the upcoming Artemis missions by just understanding the environment, but we're also doing this to try and grow things on the moon, right? To understand the environment a little bit better for that potential of humans permanently staying on the moon, right?
Yeah, there's a difference between tourism and settlement. And what we've done in the past, at least on the human program, was essentially tourism. Show up for a few days and then split. If you're going to be in that environment for long periods of time, you need to really understand the environment and really be able to utilize that to allow you to have a continuous presence. So you need to use local resources, local materials, and your knowledge of the local environment.
And I have a question. If the opportunity presented itself, would you be there growing on the moon? Would you, I think they would need you the most on the moon because you kind of understand it the most, right?
Well, it would be really cool. It would be really cool, but the problem is I'm an old guy and I get motion sick.
Okay, yeah, if you get motion sickness with some of the things here on Earth.
Yeah, well, I had trouble with Mission Space in Disney. So the ride at Disney, you know, that was plenty for me. So.
Oh, yeah, the Disney ride, yep.
I want to try to help as much as possible, but, you know, I'm too old and too fat to be an astronaut.
And Dan, lastly, I have to ask, what about some other places? You know, I know there's a big talk about potentially mining asteroids. You know, your lab makes regolith of other things, right? So, you know, what are just those other capabilities?
Correct. We make a variety of Martian regoliths because, you know, this is a whole planet. So you have different mineralogies and mineral assemblages in different places. So we make several types of Martian regolith. We make several types of asteroid regolith, and mining asteroids is becoming a thing. And of course, Mars is the eventual goal of a lot of this human exploration. So what we try to do is support that as well. Yeah, and let me put in a shameless plug, which is that if you want to get some of it for yourself, there is a website. Just Google Space Resources Technologies, which is the marketing and distribution end of the whole regolith production operation. And they take credit cards and they will be happy to ship it to you by the kilo or by the ton.
So if I were to just buy some and try and grow my own plants, that's just something I can try and do at home.
Of course.
Make my own plants in moon soil.
Grow your own in plants. You know, be careful when you open the package because this stuff is actually finer than what you're used to in dirt. Dirt tends to clump together a lot more than regolith. And so, you know, certainly put it in a planter, but you're going to have to add things to allow the plants to get nutrients and to allow enough space between the grain so that the roots can grow. So think about a soil remediation process. One of the things that works really well are earthworms. Because earthworms somehow don't mind it as much as other critters. Or, you know, some sort of fertilizer and, you know, stuff to remediate the soil with.
Okay, so note to self, when I buy my moon dirt, I also have to buy earthworms. Well, I look forward to trying my own hand at this. Dan, thank you so much for joining us to talk about all of the fun things you can do with moon dirt and all of the research possibilities. Thank you so much for coming to speak with me today.
Certainly.
That was Dan Britt, a Pegasus Professor of Planetary Sciences at the Physics Department at the University of Central Florida. Still to come, how do we grow food off of our planet?
On Earth, to have a soil, you have to have two things. You have to have organic matter and you have to have microorganisms. When we get to the moon, we don't have any of those things. So that's one of the challenges we had to face.
Checking in on lunar chickpeas, that's ahead on Are We There Yet?
Support for WMFE comes from Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University's worldwide campus, where highly ranked online degree programs offer the flexibility to learn what students want from wherever they are. More at erau.edu/worldwide.
You're listening to Are We There Yet? From Central Florida Public Media. I'm Marion Summerall, filling in for Brendan Byrne. NASA is helping out with a problem a little closer to home, with giant tortoises. The Galapagos National Park Directorate and Galapagos Conservancy and NASA are looking at NASA satellite data to help bring the giant tortoises back to an island in the Galapagos. We'll hear more about that on a future episode of Are We There Yet? But for now, we are talking about growing plants in moon dirt. One big goal for NASA is to one day have humans living and working on the moon. But to live on the lunar surface, humans need a few things, like water, shelter, and especially food. Can we successfully grow food in soil off of our planet? That's what scientists are trying to do with chickpeas. Here to talk more about growing these legumes in synthetic moon dirt is Sarah Santos, the postdoctoral scholar at the University of Texas at Austin Institute for Geophysics, and Jess Adkin, a doctoral candidate in the Department of Soil and Crop Sciences at Texas A&M. Sarah, Jess, welcome to Are We There Yet?
Thank you for having us.
I'm really excited to talk about this. We're talking about moon dirt, which it's quite different from the soil we have here on Earth. Let's talk about it. What are some of the key differences?
So on Earth, to have a soil, you have to have two things. You have to have organic matter, and you have to have microorganisms. When we get to the moon, we don't have any of those things. So that's one of the challenges we had to face.
Yeah, there's also the question about the structure, because on Earth, we have weathering of our soils, but on the moon, we do not, which means the particles on the moon are quite sharp, which can cause all sorts of issues, including micro tears in the roots of the plant.
If I went to the moon right now and I planted something, it's probably not going to grow, right?
Maybe for a short time and perhaps not well.
Okay. I have a green thumb. When I'm planting something, I use soil that has some specific minerals, maybe even a fertilizer. So are those some of the things that are missing in moon dirt? What are some of the properties that make it so different?
So actually, there are a few benefits and similarities to what we have on Earth soil, especially when it comes to terms of nutrients that a plant would need to survive. It has largely most of the things plants need, minus nitrogen, although they're not in the form that is easily accessible for plants, so they can't just go grab them as they are. But they do have challenges besides just the structure. There are a high amount of heavy metals present. Specifically in the planned Artemis landing sites, we're looking at high levels of aluminum and iron, which can be toxic to plants.
I'm assuming that we don't really have the technology to just go grab moon dirt and bring it back, right? So where are you actually getting your moon dirt from that you use?
We use a simulant because the actual regolith brought back from the Apollo missions is kept in a very specific safe area, and it's not something they have a lot of. So we use a simulant that is modeled after the specific landing sites, and we actually get that from Exolith Labs in Florida.
Fascinating. Yeah. So you literally have to kind of make this moon dirt, right? I mean, we can't just go up to the moon and come right back down with a big jar of it, right? You have to get it from somewhere.
Yeah. And I'll add that we use it in large quantities. So we're planting about 1/4 gallon pots per plant. And we have quite a lot of plants. So we need a lot of this simulated moon dust.
That's so interesting. I want to talk about that, of some of these plants. So we're here today to talk about chickpeas. Why chickpeas, like out of every other plant? And also, what were your findings?
So chickpeas aren't typically what you think of when you think of a model crop for space systems, but I think they should be. And we study them and use them in these simulants for many reasons. One is that they are incredibly stress tolerant. Chickpeas do well in a lot of environments you put them in. They are also really high in protein, up to 22%. So that can help when we're looking at keeping the astronauts' muscles strong. But my favorite reason is because these plants don't grow alone when they're on Earth. They partner up with microorganisms that can help them access these nutrients and live through these stressors while improving the structure of the regolith simulant.
Okay, very interesting. So that's kind of why they're the main target, is because they can actually like help other systems. What I want to talk about too is the aluminum factor, right? Did you have to add anything to the soil to kind of help the chickpeas grow better in the moon dirt?
Yes, yes. We did add the two things. I had mentioned earlier that on Earth, to be a soil, you need organic matter and microorganisms. So we thought we need to supplement both of these things to potentially get a healthy crop. So the first thing we did was we used organic matter in the form of vermicompost. I know that sounds intimidating, but basically it's just worm poop. And the reason why we chose this is because worms can essentially recycle the items that would normally be thrown away on a space station, say things like food scraps or coffee grounds or even the t-shirts that astronauts are done wearing, and provide a fertilizer and some organic matter. So that would tackle one of the issues. But the other issue was microorganisms. So we went with something called arbuscular mycorrhizae, and it's a fungi. And the coolest thing about this fungi was it was actually one of the things that helped early plants colonize land on Earth. So we thought, can we use this same ancient symbiosis and get these same properties on the moon?
That is just fascinating. Yeah. And so what did we find with growing with these chickpeas, right? How did they fare? Were they tastier than normal chickpeas? Let's just talk about some of the findings.
I would like to start with saying every plant that was in any regolith mixture was stressed. They didn't grow as well as the concentrations got higher of regolith to vermicompost. The plants got smaller. And we saw that in terms of reproduction as well. In the higher concentrations, while they did produce seeds when inoculated with the fungi, they had less seeds. So they were struggling, but we were able to get a seed, and they all maintained about the same size as a healthy earth potting mix. And for the question of if they're healthy to eat now, that's such a wonderful question, because we want to make sure those metals don't get into the seeds. And we are currently testing for not only metal accumulation, but how much protein do they have? How nutritious are they? And we should be releasing that follow-up paper this year.
I will add that I tried to plead to Jess to let me eat the chickpeas, but she said no. I was willing.
I would love to have like moon hummus. That sounds fantastic. You're listening to Are We There Yet? The radio show exploring space exploration. I'm Marion Summerall, filling in for Brendan Byrne. We are talking about growing chickpeas in synthetic moon dirt with Sarah Santos, the postdoctoral scholar at the University of Texas at Austin Institute for Geophysics, and Jess Adkin, a doctoral candidate in the Department of Soil and Crop Sciences at Texas A&M. I guess I really want to touch on, you know, you mentioned, okay, well, they're smaller, right? They're still successful. That is a success. Nonetheless, they were able to produce seeds, right? That's an incredible feat. Looking at the future, what will we, like, as humanity, have to do essentially to grow food on the moon?
So I think it's going to be kind of a combination approach. We have to be wary of how much material we need to ship, because it's incredibly expensive if we're just to ship Earth soil. But there are already really awesome studies going on the ISS where they largely use hydroponic systems, which use water and nutrients instead of a soil. So I think it's going to be important we use many different systems and many different crops to make sure we kind of have fail-safes.
Fail-safes. Okay, that's really interesting. Sarah, do you have anything to add on to that too?
Yeah, we couldn't today just go to the moon and plant, because plants are going to need nitrogen just like humans need nitrogen. So if there was the lunar settlement and there was an engineered structure that allowed us to keep the environment, the air like we have on the ISS, and that we could bring some regolith, I can see us being able to plant. I think when it comes to shipments, and also thinking about the cost of shipping things, I think it would be much more fun and cheap to have a pocket full of worms and fungi that we could use for these methods that we describe in the study that we did.
Well, and you mentioned something that was really interesting earlier. I believe it was Jess, you said that where the Artemis astronauts will be landing, there's a lot of aluminum there. So that's really interesting too, is there's this big push to go to, you know, the south pole of the moon. But is that the best place to even grow plants, right? I guess where would be the best place to grow plants on the moon?
As you get to other areas, you're going to deal with different metals in different concentrations. So that's one of the superpowers of this fungi. So not only can it link up with the plant roots, but it secretes a protein that is basically like a glue. I hate to say this, but like a fungal booger.
I love that, fungal booger.
This protein can actually bind to these metals and reduce the uptake into the plant. So yes, we are going to deal with issues of certainly looking at heavy metals, but we also have to look at methods to prevent the uptake in plants. And that's why we're testing them to see if these methods work, how healthy they are. If they are not healthy, how many generations of growth until they are, and essentially how long until these microorganisms and plants working together will create a healthy lunar soil that perhaps we could then grow different plants in.
How close are we to having that capability of growing plants on the moon and even potentially living on the moon?
We're a little bit closer today than we were yesterday. I'm not going to claim that our method is going to solve all the issues because we really control for a lot of the variables. So the chickpeas have ideal watering cycles, ideal light. They're not being grown in reduced gravity. They don't have the risks of radiation. So we're really focusing on one of the many hazards that you find on the moon. There's a lot of research to be done. But if we can provide the ideal conditions and the only hazard that the chickpeas or other plants have to deal with is the regolith, I'd say that our method gets us pretty close. There's certainly other methods out there as well that can work in conjunction with this method to get us even closer.
And now I have to ask, right? Because even though, right, Sarah and I are ready to try these chickpeas, we're ready. What if I don't like chickpeas? What else can you grow in moon dirt? Are you all growing anything else?
So the cool thing about this fungi, if you were to just look out your window, 80% of the plants that you see are going to form relationships with it. So this opens up a lot of crops that could potentially be used with this method.
Really interesting. Are there any other like examples of a plant that y'all are growing or that is, you know, similar in that manner?
I feel that legumes are a system that needs to be looked at because, you know, in some of our other work, we have been pairing bacteria that can fix nitrogen with these chickpeas to overcome another challenge. So I think legumes should be studied a little bit more, especially for that high protein content, their ability to handle stress, and their ability to go out and partner with these beneficial microorganisms.
There's some legumes that form this association with this fungi, like lentils, for example, fava beans, and peas.
Sarah, Jess, thank you so much for joining us. Sarah Santos is the postdoctoral scholar at the University of Texas at Austin Institute for Geophysics. Jess Adkin is at Texas A&M as a doctoral candidate in the Department of Soil and Crop Sciences. Jess, Sarah, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having us.
That's going to do it for this week's show. If you're not already, be sure to subscribe to the show's podcast feed so you never miss an episode. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Stay connected with this show. Be sure to follow us on social media. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook. We're at AWTY Space. And if you've got an idea for a future episode of this show or you want to join us as a guest, reach out to us. We're at arewethereyet@cfpublic.org. Are We There Yet? Is a production of Central Florida Public Media. Our host is Brendan Byrne. Our producer is me, Marion Summerall. Our intern is Orion Boone. Editorial guidance from Latoya Dennis. Support for Are We There Yet? Comes from our listeners. Brendan's back next week. Until then, I'm Marion Summerall. Thanks for listening.